is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Welcome to another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, TuneIn, Google Play, anywhere else you can find podcasts. Make sure you subscribe, leave us a review, tell your friends to subscribe, and check out the other podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network as well. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, like us on Facebook at Locked On Bulls, and if you want to advertise with us or have questions you want us to answer in the show, make sure you email us at LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. I'm Sean Hyken of The Athletic. With me, as always, Cody Westerlund of 670 The Score. Cody, not much in the way of hard Bulls news these days, is there?
There really isn't. Fred Hoiberg was, from the sounds of it, living it up in Ames for an Iowa State reunion this past weekend, where he did speak to a few local reporters in Iowa. And I guess the hardest Bulls news we'll have in this entire podcast before we get to basically another mailbag of your questions is the fact that Fred Hoiberg said of Zach LaVine and his recovery from an ACL injury, quote, hopefully we'll get him back shortly after the start of the season, end quote. There you have it, hard Bulls news. Let's try to define what shortly means, Sean, after the start of the season.
So the number we've been going with like up until now is basically January 1st. I think that technically counts as shortly still. I would say December might be a realistic...
This makes me think a little sooner than our January 1st, and I should say this. I think when Fred says that he thinks before January 1st, no doubt, I think it's still very conceivable that could be around the time when he actually comes back. I mean, the season starts in mid-October now, the regular season, not late October, mid-October now. Shortly after that, to me, would insinuate like a month into the season or something. Now, I don't know, again, we're just parsing the definition of the word shortly here, but I get the sense from LaVine being in Vegas Summer League around the Bulls and making that comment that he's working so hard and hopes to be ready by the season opener and feels like he should be based on how his body feels now projecting forward. And obviously Hoiberg and Zach being around each other a lot there in Summer League, that maybe that's the way it's wearing off, where I think the front office is probably sitting up there on the second floor of the Advocate Center, more or less still going, not 3 weeks in the season. No, let's be really cautious. Let's lose a lot of games. Let's try to get that 4-23 stretch going the White Sox have in MLB right now as they hunt down the top pick in the MLB draft. Again, I cannot emphasize this enough. The Bulls need to lose a whole lot next year, and they need to have the most losses in the NBA. Holding Zach LaVine out an extra month makes a lot of sense.
So do you think December or January?
Based off Hoiberg's comments, I'm going to predict sometime mid-December now. I guess that's my prediction.
I think December sounds about right.
This is completely subject to change as soon as LaVine and Hoiberg and everyone gets on the record on media day, because you know, oh, he's already going through half of practice on the non-contact stuff and looking great. Maybe it does change, you know what I mean?
Right.
But again, it makes all the sense in the world. I'm going to guess mid-December. There you go.
Okay.
You have it. What's our Nico stalemate standoff update, Sean?
Still unsigned?
31 days in July. On the 8th day of August, if my math's right. Not always a math guy, but sounds like 39 days to me, in which Nico's just been chilling, working at the Advocate Center, and waiting on a new contract. The time where we're like, yep, this could go into mid-September, closer to training camp, it feels like that more every day.
Yeah, when we have something to update, we'll update you on that. Right now, there's no changes, as far as I know, with the Nico situation.
Everyone should just go on vacation, you know?
Yeah.
August is when everyone in the NBA, it's like the only time anyone in the NBA can go on vacation. You know what I mean? Like, if you're full-fledged into this, whether you're player, executive, writer, anyone.
You saying that, though, means that Kyrie Irving is going to get traded tonight.
Yeah, that's true, but that's a hashtag not my problem. That's a Cavs beat writer problem. Like, the best part, too, of all the Cavs beat writers is there's been, like, they have, like, three or four main guys there, obviously, Joe Vardon, Jason Lloyd. I know they've both tweeted things to this effect of, dang, Cavs news breaking right when I'm on vacation. Damn it, basically. And so at least we don't have that. The nice part about the Bulls rebuild is there's no, like, hammer hanging over the head of breaking news coming at any moment in time, like when the Bulls had Jimmy Butler and they were shopping him.
A couple more pieces of hard Bulls news. One, Jimmy Butler went to Dwayne Wade's basketball camp. They didn't do media availability, but he was there. They're still friends. That hasn't changed since he got traded.
Jimmy took the crew out to a sushi restaurant in River North, according to the Tribune's KC Johnson. Did some reporting on that. So, and I say crew, I mean a lot of behind-the-scenes Bulls staffers. I don't think he invited the front office to, like, some sit-down or whatever. This was just a, hey, all these people that helped me out over the years, thank you very much. I make a lot of money. Like, I can afford new sushi restaurant bills
probably,
and tabs.
Probably like equipment manager, strength and conditioning, like that kind of, those kinds of staff.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I think most people in the Bulls organization really loved Jimmy. I think a lot of them could roll their eyes at him, and I think the challenges that Jimmy presented to the coaching staff was probably the most contentious, it's fair to say. Mm-hmm. He had a great relationship with ownership. I think he and the front office didn't see eye to eye, but he respected Pax, no doubt. You know, he went out of his way several times to point that out. And, like, look, I mean, Jimmy was great for the whole marketing department, for ticket sales, for digital. Anyone like, hey, Jimmy, you want to be on Snapchat? Like, he was probably down for that, you know what I mean? So, most of the time, at least. Like, so I think most people, as Jimmy's way of probably saying thank you. Obviously, a little bit better relationship there than, like, Tibbs when he left. You know, he wasn't going to have a thank you dinner or Snapchat smile.
Right, and the Bulls also unveiled their new jerseys from Nike, or at least two of the four that they're going to have. They are pretty much the same, except they have a Nike logo on them.
Yeah, the one thing, though, this year, they're flip-flopping, so the home team can pick whatever jersey color they want now.
Yeah.
So the Bulls are primarily going to wear red jerseys at home, if I hear and read all of this correctly.
Yeah, that's what I saw.
Right? And traditionally, the Bulls have worn red on the road because home teams often will wear white. But now, the Bulls pick what they want, and then the road team has to contrast the color, basically.
And they're going to wear, they have two more alternates that have yet to be unveiled that are going to be unveiled
at
some point.
What are you guessing on those?
I'm hoping one of them,
white and red right now.
I'm hoping one of them is the black pinstripes from the 90s.
That one is great. Do you think the other ones, the St. Patrick's jersey, you think that's what they mean by other alternate they wear once a year, the green ones?
I hope not.
You hope not. Those are hideous jerseys.
They're still not as bad as the gray sleeved ones. If they do like even a sleeveless version of that, that would be the worst case scenario.
Yeah, I'm not into the sleeves either. I think
they're getting rid of the sleeves
quite a bit before. So that's a very good thing.
Nike's getting rid of the sleeves, but just that gray is never a good idea. Like the Celtics had a gray one, the Magic had a gray one, the Rockets had a gray one. They're all atrocious.
Yeah, correct. I would agree with most every single time. Like there's shades of gray that can be cool. I just don't know that that's on an NBA uniform at any point in time.
Do you remember the Mavericks like metallic silver ones from the early 2000s? Like when Steve Nash.
I really don't. I don't.
They only wore them for like one preseason game. They were awesome.
Okay. Fair enough.
And so you can buy these jerseys coming forward at a Bulls game, and you know where you should go to get tickets for a Bulls game.
SeatGeek,
that's right.
Who sponsors us. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there's a better, simpler way to buy with SeatGeek, which is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to the live events you want to see up close and in person. SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience allows you to buy and sell tickets with just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician or artist in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action at a great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone. It's by far the easiest way I found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, anytime, just a few clicks. I can instantly find seats. Sean, what's the next SeatGeek concert you're going to go to? The next concert you're going to go to in which you use SeatGeek?
Well, I just use it for Roger Waters. I'm looking at Kendrick Lamar later this month.
Where's that at?
That's United Center. I haven't committed to buying
tickets
yet.
There's also a parade of concerts coming up at Wrigley Field, including Green Day is coming
Green
up.
Green Day, Lady Gaga.
Yes, that's true.
I got to figure out where I'm going to work in 2 months before I buy any more concert tickets.
Well, that's true, but you can save a lot of money with SeatGeek. So even people in your predicament is great because SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. You always get the most bang for your buck because SeatGeek grades based on every ticket on value and identifies the best seats to help you fit your budget. Plus, you can shop with confidence because every ticket is fully guaranteed with SeatGeek. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, whether it's sports, concerts, comedy, or theater. Locked On Bulls listeners, here's what we need you to do. Go download the SeatGeek app. Use the promo code LONBA. That is LONBA. And you can save $20 off your first purchase. So go check out that promo code, listeners. Sean, it's mailbag time.
We got some questions.
We do love mailbag time.
Listeners came through.
Some of these are maybe more long-winded. Some we'll take care of quickly. Let's start with Jack. He asked on Twitter, and you can find us on Twitter, at Locked On Bulls. Why aren't the Bulls even considering Nerlens Noel?
That's a pretty simple answer, because if they wanted to throw him an offer sheet, they'd have to dip into their cap space to do that. And as far as I know, right now they're still kind of in the mode of they're going to renounce their cap space, they're going to stay over the cap, re-sign Felicio, they are going to re-sign Nico at some point. They use the room exception on Justin Holiday or the mini mid-level.
They want that $15 million trade exception.
That $15 million
trade
exception.
If you use cap space, you would still have some cap space to absorb a bad contract, but it probably wouldn't be $15 million anymore.
Right.
So it's all about leverage and how much value you can get in a bad contract. Reason number two, maybe they just don't think Nerlens Noel's really that good.
That's another possibility.
We got Chris Felicio. You know, he's developing. He can guard the pick and roll, be a disruptive force defensively. What's the point of Nerlens Noel?
And he's
who
making...
doesn't fit the modern NBA for what the Bulls... It makes more sense for the Bulls to add Nico, a stretch forward, than it does Nerlens Noel, who is...
More of a shot blocker.
Like. Yeah, he's a good defensive center. Like, he can move well, but he's got a lot to prove, and his offensive games really left a lot of wanting.
Also, a lot of injury risk.
But, I mean, I haven't watched him really closely, but it seems like defense thumbs up, offense thumbs down for long
He's like
stretches.
The opposite of Okafor.
Yeah.
If you could combine him and Okafor into one player, the Sixers would have been in good shape.
That's true. Jacob asks, what will the Bulls' starting lineup look like on opening night, and how should it look? And I guess, I think several people asked that question, so if several of you asked that, just know this answer is for all of you.
So we're assuming a few things here. We're assuming they keep Nico at some point. They re-sign him. We're assuming that they don't buy out Dwayne Wade before the start of the season. Because I still think that's going to happen, but I think it's not going to happen until closer to mid-season.
Agree.
And then we're also assuming that they don't trade Robin Lopez, which they aren't talking about doing. But like, there's a thought that maybe since they're rebuilding, they would do that. But
he's more of a deadline deal to me.
Yeah. So there's really only one piece of ambiguity by the starting lineup. Because Chris Dunn is going to be the starting point guard. Dwayne Wade is going to be the starting two. Nico's going to start at the four, and Lopez is going to start at the five. So it's really just the three.
Paul Zipser's my guess.
I'm going to guess Zipser as well. But, you know, maybe Justin Holiday gets in the mix. Maybe Denzel Valentine gets in the mix.
Yeah, I would say, look, they want a bigger role for Denzel this year. And I think we have a question on him, too, and we'll get to that. But I just don't know. I don't see him starting on opening night quite. Holiday would make more sense to me because he's... a little more proven. You're paying him a little bit more money, actually. I mean, you can debate about the investment. I guess first-round pick is probably more of an investment than just a... How old's Holiday? 28-year-old, you know, mid-career signing who would ideally be a backup on any team. But, you know, if you're doing the tank job, I mean, there's a lot of good options
Absolutely.
There for the Bulls for guys who... are going to be limited in some capacity in their game, whether it's offensively, defensively, or even more than that. So
I'm going to guess Zipser.
I would guess Zipser. Because, I mean, he started last year for long stretches, and you always bring up that one time he had a dagger three against the Warriors. It's got to count for something when, like, Fred's going over on the whiteboard for that last spot, right?
He's proven himself to be a capable starter, not great by any means, but solid. Knows his role.
Knight on Twitter asks, considering Denzel Valentine's struggles getting the hoop last year, in what was largely a poor rookie season, how would you like to see Fred Hoiberg use him this season? I'll chime in on that by starting and pointing out that, as Denzel and everyone point out, he was largely a spot-up shooter last year because the ball was in Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade's hands. Jimmy being gone, Dwayne probably being gone, I would guess, by year's end, and just not being in cutthroat, make the playoffs mode. The ball will be moving, I would guess, a bit more freely. The ball will end up in his hands a little bit more. I agree on the point. Denzel Valentine was a poor finisher at the rim last year. He can't beat people off the dribble in the traditional sense, just off the bounce. Now, what he can do is shot fake and use his ability to hit three-pointers to create some space for him. But mainly how I'd like to see Fred use him more than just as a spot-up shooter is allowing him to make some decisions with the ball in his hands, because he's a good passer. I should say he was a good passer in college. We didn't see a lot of that his rookie year because he was only on the end of possessions shooting three-pointers, usually, or spotting up in transition. And he talked a lot when he did go to the hoop. He thought he shot too many floaters, didn't go hard to the rim, didn't make those shots, or he thought he passed out too early. I would like to see his creativity in passing be utilized more, not just to go into the lane to do that because that's what I feel like I should do, swing the ball to the next person. Like, look, he was a good passer at Michigan, had some triple-doubles. I think one of the only players to average it was some sort of stat line, like 18-7-7 or something, like those assist numbers are 18-7-6, something like that. Was really lauded and well-regarded for that and a difference maker in that sense at a high level of college basketball in the Big Ten. So I don't know how that is done exactly. I think it starts with putting the ball in his hands early and plays more and maybe having some sets for him in which he gets to make those decisions. But I think that's logical. Anything to add in that regard?
Yeah, I would like to see them use him as a ball handler a little bit more as a playmaker. And I think, like you said, there's going to be more room to do that with Jimmy Butler, you know, so ball dominant. They don't have anybody that's as ball dominant as him on the team anymore. I think that's a good opportunity for him.
Yeah, and there should be some time there too because
especially once Wade gets bought out.
Yeah, Levine will come back, but I mean, look, he is a little bit different of a player than D-Wade still in that sense. So we'll keep an eye on that. We've got to combine two Bobby Portis questions here. Jacob asked us about that Bulls starting lineup. Also asked us, could the Bulls use Bobby Portis, or should they use Bobby Portis as a point forward more often? Trancy asks, what type of ceiling do you see for Bobby Portis? So the ball's in your court on these Bobby Portis questions, Sean.
Well, let's tackle the point forward one first. Bobby Portis, when Bobby Portis gets the ball, he's putting the shot up. I've not seen anything in his game that makes me think, oh, that's a guy that can be a facilitator. No.
Maybe, Jacob, the fact that Bobby Portis, point forward, Bobby Portis can end up at the top of the key out there at the arc and pick and rolls, certainly, with the ball in his hands. That doesn't necessarily mean you're a point forward. At that point in time, you can be a power forward on the perimeter with the ball in your hands making decisions on where to pass and that being your best step or option. That doesn't mean you're a point forward. Like, the Ben Simmons thing is going to be maybe point forward.
Right.
Right? For the 76ers.
What Giannis can do.
Yes, exactly.
LeBron.
What Giannis can do and LeBron for long stretches. So, no, the Bulls, anything that involves Bobby Portis being the fulcrum of the offense, making the decisions, isn't good. That's the point guard's job. That's Denzel Valentine's job. Guys who have proved, at least at some level before, that that's what they should be doing. Is it cool for Bobby to become better at passing? Absolutely. That's great. If he wants to incorporate some point forward decision making in, sure. But no, the Bulls should do nothing offensively to encourage that. Now, the ceiling of Bobby Portis' part. That's a good question. What is his ceiling? Promising rookie year. Stunted sophomore year, I think, is probably the best way to put it in terms of development.
He needs to get better at defense.
He's got to get better at being an all-around player. Defense.
Right.
Passing.
He can hit those mid-range shots. He's a good rebounder.
Yeah, I mean, defense takes, I mean, that's 50% of the game, and he needs to work on all 50% of that, pretty much. He still, to me, feels like at times, and maybe I should go back and check stats on this, but he feels like a better offensive rebounder than defensive rebounder at times. You know what I mean? Like, crash that offensive glass. It just, and this is anecdotal, but it feels like he cleans the glass better offensively than even defensively. And I think some of that is a young player in concentration, you know what I mean, and responsibility. But, I mean, ceiling-wise, we said what he needs to work on, but what is his ceiling? Is he, for a team whose aspirations is to go deep in the postseason down the line, okay? Like, let's not frame this in terms of can he be the starting power forward on a team that beats the Golden State Warriors? Let's not get into that discussion. But for a team that wants to go deep in the Eastern Conference playoffs and make noise 3-4 years from now, say, is he a viable starting power forward? Is that a ceiling? Or does he have to be the sixth man on that team? Does he have to be the fourth big man on that team? What do you think?
I think I kind of see him as more of a third big type. I mean, if he can develop into a starter, great, but I think third big, if he can put some of those skills together, is a little bit more of a safe assumption for him.
Yes, I agree with that. Bobby Portis on a team in the playoffs making noise with contending aspirations is a backup, I think. He's a rotation player, yes. And look, they drafted him, was it 22 overall? Was that it, or 21? Slipping my mind a little bit there. But getting a rotation player there it's fine, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I think that's your hope. I know the Bulls, when they drafted him, because everyone said he's a steal and he fell and they loved him and they didn't even really do a ton of homework on him and scout him and bring him in because they didn't ever think he'd million years he'd be available, and then he was, and then he had a really good spurt as a rookie and raised expectations. Just because all of that happened, I don't think you go back and denigrate the draft pick for getting a rotation player at number 22, but I do think his sophomore season, the Bulls haven't said this publicly, I really haven't heard it privately either. But it's my hunch and inkling that they have recalibrated expectations maybe internally for Bobby a little bit. Uh-huh. Whereas a year ago, they legit thought he could be a starting caliber power forward in the NBA. I don't think in their heart of hearts they believe that anymore. Do you have anything to add there?
I think the fact that they want to bring Nico back kind of says a lot about where they view. Because if they thought that, oh, Bobby is going to be our long-term starter, they might be more willing to, you know, say, you know, be non-committal about Nico, but wanting to bring Nico back makes me think they maybe aren't fully committed to Bobby as a starter long-term.
I'll fix this question problem. Be the worst team, get the number one pick, draft Michael Porter, plug him in at power forward, and then you don't have to worry about the Bobby Portis potential question anymore. He can just be your backup big man. See, I'm a genius. I solved everything. Lose a lot.
Problem solver,
hey,
Cody.
Remember? It's Cody's 122 points per game plan. Should I trademark that? Allow 122 points per game and you'll have the best chance at the number one pick in the NBA draft.
That's gonna be the Cody Westerlund book about, because you know how the Jack McCallum seven seconds or less book about the Suns.
122 points or more.
Yeah.
How to rebuild a basketball organization from the ground up. Like, look, we're going to have some bits on Twitter as the year goes on. I don't care if you're in Australia, Italy, out west, east, midwest, covering the NBA, wherever you are, right here in Chicago again, covering the Bulls every night. We're going to have some bits here on Twitter in which, like, we make jokes that are long-running jokes every night.
Absolutely.
For the Bulls. Like, that's how you get through rebuilds. Like, you might right now be saying, as Bulls fans, like, that's how you get through rebuilds if you're a writer who has to watch bad basketball all the time. Like, no, you guys are going to be invested in these jokes, too, by, like, week three of the regular season.
This is where Zip Sanity came from.
Yes, you guys are going to love this. Because, like, all that Zip Sanity when the Bulls, you know, were still contending 500, going for the playoff runs and second round Eastern Conference playoff appearances, the semis of the conference. All that, like, think how many jokes and bits we had on Twitter then. Like, this is just going to be breeding grounds for them, a rebuild, you know what I mean? So, looking forward to that. If you have any bits of your own, you know, just taglines, slogans, jokes, things you want jokingly asked.
You can't force
moment,
it, though. It's got to be organic.
That's actually a very good point. That is a very good point. You can't force it. It's like nicknames. You can't force nicknames. They kind of have to happen naturally, you know.
Now, speaking of Australia, you mentioned Australia. We got a question.
Oh, your guy James.
His name is James Butler. I wonder if that's his real name.
I don't know. If it is,
shout out to you, and that's good that you happen to be a Bulls fan, but your name is James Butler.
Yeah, so you wear a Jimmy Butler jersey and go to the game next
year.
They're
like, hey, it's me.
It's you. But James says he's coming for a road trip to Bulls games this season. What should he do in Chicago? What should he do? A Bulls fan, what should he do in Chicago?
I'm mostly thinking about recommending places to eat. Our spot is Roots. He's got to go.
Oh, we love Roots Pizza.
It's not deep dish, but
we're going to need to get Friedel on the podcast to explain, like, the best steakhouses and such. We're, like, pizza and burrito guys.
We don't have steakhouse money. We don't have ESPN.
We're very much pizza and burrito.
We're men of the people.
Yes, we are. I don't know. As a Bulls fan, like, you need to... I would wander around the atrium and check out the Jordan statue.
Sure.
And everything. If it's winter, it's a little more difficult because some of the tourist attractions, it's just really, really freaking cold. And some of the things that sound fun in the summer, like going to concerts, just aren't going to be had in the winter. But give him some more advice. What else should he do? You can go to the opera, like Pal.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. I'm like the least cultured opera person of all time, so I don't know what to say there. But look, there's a lot of good live music in Chicago, all over, all the time. Check that scene out. I'm trying to think. Next time we get Friedel on the podcast.
Which has to happen.
Soon. We're going to give him all the eating recommendations. Because he knows the good places better. RPM, obviously. Stuff like that. Chicago Cut. All about that steakhouse life. I would love it. I recommend all those places. But for the people who have been in Chicago a lot longer. Well, that's the funny thing. Like, my family asked me these things. Like, friends from out of town asked me these things. And they're like, yeah, coming to Chicago, like, what should I do? Like, I never tour. I don't do anything. Like, the last time I took...
The architectural tour is the thing people like to do?
Yeah. Like, that's really awesome and legit. Like, I just had family friends come in who said they did that last time. And, like, I'm like, that's awesome. The last time I did that was 7th grade, or maybe I was a freshman when I was visiting Chicago with my parents. And that was probably 16 years ago, something like that. I don't know. And, like, I don't do touristy things. I go to some concerts, you know, like, meet my friends out at the bar, stuff like that. I don't go on the Navy Pier Ferris wheel, you know what I'm
right,
saying?
Right, no. Like, I have not taken a selfie in front of the Bean.
Yes, well, oh, go to the Bean. You should definitely go to the Bean. And I say that absolutely shaking my head behind the microphone here because... Like, yeah, everybody goes to the Bean. I mean, the Bean's
It's
cool.
Like the Voodoo Donuts of Chicago.
Yeah.
Portland. It's like...
Walk down... Like, go for a walk by the lake, for sure. There's a lot of cool stuff.
I don't know about in December, but...
Yeah, oh, dang it. I forgot that part of it. Yeah, you're right. That's for sure.
But yeah, there's a lot of cool just sightseeing stuff.
How long can Sean and Cody combine to live in Chicago? How many years before they have one good tourist suggestion? Because we're up to, like, 9 combined years probably here in Chicago, I've been here almost 4 years now.
I guess almost four.
3.5. So we're around like 8 combined years and have no good ideas. Maybe we'll have to take advice from the people here too. But James, we'll re-ask that question to smarter people too down the line. People that know Chicago even better than us. Noah asked, we're not done yet here, just because we're giving advice for mid-December. Noah still asks, what's the best game you guys have ever covered? Or games, if you want to go plural and have more than one here. He didn't say it had to be in the NBA. He didn't say it had to be basketball. I think that's the context we'll answer it in. But, I mean, say what you think.
Well, what's yours? Because I've got one.
Well, good question. I have several that come to mind. I will never forget the back-to-back, I think you're going to say this too, Eastern Conference semifinal games between the Bulls and Cavs at the United Center when Derrick Rose hit the game-winning three and then LeBron buried the Bulls from the corner at the buzzer. Those were two just incredibly tense games. It wasn't high-scoring basketball in each occasion. I think it was 99-96, the one that Rose hit the three on, and 86-84, if my memory serves correctly, on the LeBron. So it's not like there was this beautiful flow of, like, Warriors hanging 120, perfect basketball, where some of the Cavs-Warriors games got hot. And I'll let you get there in a minute. But, like, both those teams played defense really hard. That was a season, LeBron's first season in Cleveland. And people misremember sometimes or forget this. Like, the Cavs largely got to the finals that year based on the strength of their defense. Mm-hmm. Like, that was physical basketball,
that was
locked in.
Love was out, Kyrie was banged up.
Yeah, Dellavedova was out there, LeBron was just carrying the Cavs on his back.
When Dellavedova did the, like, leg lock thing on Taj.
Yes, there was so much, a couple other points on these. The shot that Derrick Rose made to tie game 4 before LeBron beat the Bulls was a ridiculously hard shot that people also overlook, I think. He went to the basket, and everyone will say, like, vintage Rose. Well, vintage Rose probably would have dunked or something.
Sure.
Or had an and one. But he made this contorting, twisting shot that was like a high banker over outstretched arms and fell to the floor, getting bumped to, knifing through the D, and it was like, People forget how good of a play that was by D. Rose and some of the plays the Bulls made down the stretch there to get back in it, where they had the lead, and then I think they were behind a few points. And then LeBron got them, obviously. But that atmosphere when Rose hit the three in Game 3 was incredible. And I guess the last thing I'd say about those two games was the shadow of the two coaching situations. You knew it was Tibbs' last stand. You knew it. You know what I mean? Everyone knew that.
The LeBron game winner was the one where the...
Blatt should have been called for a technical without any timeouts.
And then LeBron just completely drove the bus over David Blatt after. Did David Blatt... Was that the one where David Blatt also, like, compared himself to a fighter pilot?
No, that was a regular season game. I'm almost certain.
No, that was the playoffs. It was definitely the playoffs.
Okay. Excuse me. The regular season game was when Barack Obama was in attendance, and he said, I've played in front of a lot of presidents before and state leaders.
Yes.
Okay, it's really hard to keep all of David Blatt's comparisons and metaphors right there, fresh of mind. But yeah, take the floor. What are the best games you've covered?
So I've got a couple of... So I think the best Bulls one, or at least the most memorable Bulls one to me, was the game against the Thunder two years ago. Etuan Moore game winner. That was in the middle of Westbrook, because Durant was out. That was the year Durant had the foot thing, so he was out most of the year.
Bulls night, too.
TNT Bulls night. That was maybe the weirdest TNT Bulls night. Russ was in the middle of his triple-double streak, and that was also the really memorable part is that was Craig Sager's first game back after, because he had his first leukemia diagnosis, and he missed like 9 months or 10 months. And then they cleared him to come back, and this was the first game where he was back, and like they did a whole video.
He had a wonderful
ovation,
and he had that like red plaid suit on.
Right,
like,
he was wearing like Bulls colors.
Yeah, he had like the Bulls red slacks basically on, and just an outrageous sports coat.
And so so that's one. My other one, the non-Bulls one, is game. I think it was 4 of the Eastern Finals in 2014 Heat Pacers when Lance Stephenson like blew in LeBron's
ear.
You
love that game so much.
It was so great, and LeBron had like 5 fouls in the third quarter. It was the weirdest LeBron game I think he's ever played in his career. And the crazy thing about that game is the Heat almost won. They kicked it out to Bosch in the corner at the buzzer for a 3 and he missed it.
Okay. I completely forgot that.
That was a weird one. Some of those Cavs Warriors, I wasn't at any of the finals this year, but the first two Cavs Warriors finals.
First two chapters.
It was pretty cool to be at some of those games. Game 6 last year when Steph got frustrated and threw the mouth guard, and then Ayesha tweeted that like the game was rigged. Yeah. Like that. It's all that.
We like the off the court stuff.
LeBron was unbelievable in that series, though.
Kyrie was unbelievable in that series too.
Yeah, but especially LeBron. I think the first Cavs Warriors finals, the one that the Warriors won. I think LeBron should have been MVP in that series.
Oh, I don't disagree. Yeah. I don't disagree with you on that. I've been MVP contrarian already. I feel like I've stumped for James Harden both times he got second or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Got overlooked. I would agree with you on that one too. I will point. Is there any other sporting event or level of basketball or game you've been at? Basketball or otherwise, that stands out. I always remember covering a high school basketball regional championship. Shout out to Paxton Buckley Loda. I think this was, 2011-ish, I think?
Okay.
Double overtime win, one of those high school basketball regional championships where, like, fire code and capacity is, like, 1,200 people and somehow, like, 1,500 people find their way into the building and had a buzzer beater in double overtime. That game was awesome. Crazy stuff like that, crazy ending, like ball bouncing 4 times in a prayer at the buzzer to win. Anything else stand out for you?
I think that's about it for the really, really memorable ones. There hasn't been a lot of memorable Bulls basketball the last few years.
Yeah, yeah.
The dunk contest in Toronto between Zach LaVine and Eric Gordon was pretty unbelievable.
The best Bulls tie or moment you have now is to Zach LaVine on a different team in an all-star uniform.
Yes.
We'll wrap it up with this question. A little bit of a hypothetical. But it pertains to something the Bulls are hoping to do in a greater sense. Gabriel on Twitter asks, if the Knicks wanted to dump Joakim Noah's contract, do you think the Bulls would take him back? I think left unsaid there is obviously the Bulls taking on a bad contract of any sorts, which they publicly said they're willing to do, has to come back with other assets, either good draft picks or good young promising players. And we obviously reference the Nets taking on the Mozgov contract recently and getting D'Angelo Russell attached with that from the Lakers. The Bulls want to do that in some form. Could you ever see them doing it with Joakim Noah?
No.
Why?
Because that contract is paying him $18 million a year for the next 3 years. We don't know if he's ever going to be able to play again. They would have to put a lot of assets into that deal. It would have to be like Ntilikina and an unprotected first-round pick for that to be worth it, for the Bulls to take on that much money.
I mean, that's kind of the formula for what it's going to be. You're not going to get a guy on an expiring contract. You're taking bad money into the future.
But that's so much bad money. There's a difference between that and, like, Brandon Knight for, like, 13 a year.
What's the difference between Joakim Noah's contract and Mozgov's? $16 million a year, basically, for Mozgov, and $18 million a year for Noah, signed on the same timeline.
If Mozgov's a better player right now than Noah is.
If the Lakers had offered that deal to the Bulls, do you think the Bulls would have done it, and what would you have done if you were in the Bulls situation?
I would have done it. I would have taken D'Angelo Russell.
Okay. Yeah.
But
that's exactly
the Knicks don't have anything as good as D'Angelo Russell to get back.
And you said the Frank Ntilikina obviously is a point guard, maybe a type of asset. And obviously they don't want to part ways with him. But that's redundant for the Bulls having Chris Dunn. Here's another reason I do not think they... I wouldn't say there's a 0% chance. I would say there's at least a non-0% chance because the Knicks go tanking and all of a sudden say, we'll give you that unprotected first-round pick or top two or three protected first-round pick. And obviously you're just looking like, is this Knicks front office as dumb as the last Knicks front office? I can take Joakim Noah and get the number 6 or 7 overall pick because they're so bad. You know, if it's one of those things, I'm not completely ruling it out because of how much of a dysfunctional organization the Knicks have been in the front office in recent years. And I know Phil Jackson's out now. But there's always the chance, I guess. You know what I mean? As long as James Dolan is running a team, I feel like anything's possible, probably in New York.
I don't think the Bulls would do it, though.
But the part overlooking, Joakim Noah and Fred Hoiberg's relationship was very poor. Culture is extremely important to the Bulls now. Respecting the coach is more important than ever. Having a positive working environment in which everyone is on the same page with Fred Hoiberg is very important. Joakim Noah and Fred were not stemming, of course. I think we've talked about this too many times already with Fred kind of pushing a false narrative that Joakim volunteered to come off the bench.
Right.
A prideful man. I understand Fred trying the greater good when it was going through his mind at that time, a team player type thing, portraying Joakim as that. But having not been around Joe for a long time, he didn't understand how prideful Joe was and the fact that Joe was the consummate team player for years, and he was more than willing to say that and display that in his actions. He didn't need others speaking for him. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's the type of guy Joe is. So no, I don't ever foresee that happening. But the Bulls want high draft picks, and they will listen to anything you have to say on the phone if you have high draft picks on the table for them. I think that wraps up this episode of Locked on Bulls, which you can find on Facebook, you can find on Twitter, both by its name. Where else? They find you at Hyken on Twitter, myself at Cody Westerlund. Email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com with all your basketball questions, your non-basketball tourist-related questions, in which we give you very poor advice on because we need to do a better job of being tourists ourselves.
Tourists in the place where we live.
Yeah, maybe that should be on our off-season bucket list before the Bulls get going officially in late September. Send us your advertising inquiries our way as well. We always appreciate those willing to talk at all times. And most of all, subscribe. Tell your friends. Click the podcast button. And just listen to Locked on Bulls.
That's right. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, TuneIn, Google Play. Anywhere else you can find podcasts also. Make sure you go on there, subscribe. 5-star reviews. Only 5 stars. Check out the other podcasts in the Locked On Podcast Network. We'll be back with you guys again soon. Thanks for listening.